Today on Piano Jazz, we remember Ellis Larkins. He was a jazz pianist who began lessons at the age of 6 and studied the classics formally at age 15. First at the Peabody Conservatory and later earning a scholarship to Juilliard. In the early 1950s, Larkins recorded 2 very successful albums with Ella Fitzgerald and went on to play for many well-known vocalists. As a solo pianist, he was known for his subtle incorporation of classical music stylings into playing jazz. Ellis Larkins passed away in 2002 at age 79. Today, we revisit the early piano jazz archives to bring you a program from 1979 with Marian McPartland and her guest, Ellis Larkins.
It's beautiful, beautiful. Lovely to have you here. Welcome.
My pleasure.
And as usual, I'm listening to your wonderful soft touch and wondering how you ever developed such control.
Well, I think man of stats first, and then plus the fact I love the instrument, so this becomes my life when I'm playing. So I give it love; it'll give me love.
Well, that's a pretty good explanation. I like that. Plus, I imagine when you were studying at Peabody, maybe that had a little something to do with it, too.
It didn't hurt.
How long were you there?
Oh, I didn't study at Peabody per se until the last year in 1940.
Oh, yeah?
I was studying with 3 teachers from there. I studied with his teacher was still at Peabody.
Uh-huh.
That started with his teacher afterwards. So now I went through like almost like a generation of Peabody teachers.
Well, did you study classical music with them?
Sure. That's all I was studying.
You mean you played classical music before you played jazz?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
But did you ever mix up the two, or were you interested in jazz while you were playing classical music?
I was, in a way of speaking, but actually I used to play jazz because I used to listen to Fats Waller and Count Basie on the radio and Teddy Wilson, Earl Hines, and we happened in this high school we had. We seated about 2,000 people, children. And I think stayed so long quiet with Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. So in the meantime, so they were hearing the records at the time. So I started playing a little boogie woogie, whatever. So if you go to a party, but that's what I got into that.
You mean just by ear, you pick that up?
Yeah, well, sure.
Well, then when did you actually start working professionally?
Oh,
where was your first job?
I hate to say this.
Go ahead, say it anyway.
It was 1941 at Gallagher Steakhouse.
Oh, really? I didn't know they ever had music in there.
Oh, they used to have a two-piano team, Carter and Boyd.
Well, you played alone, though, in there, mm-hmm. Did you?
And I was making all the tips, so they threw me out, because I wasn't in the union yet, so they threw me out. So I had to, that was my first professional job.
That must have been hard. I mean, that would be a hard place to play with all those people running around, waiters with dishes and stuff.
But surprisingly, they were quiet. Actually, they were very quiet.
Well, maybe that's, you know, it's funny. It's a funny thing when people play quietly. It makes people listen more than if they try to overpower the noise in the room.
Well, you can't play. You can't play over talking. There's no way you can do that, because if you get louder, you become the louder they become, and it gets the thing, and then you hear nothing at all. So that might as well just stay. Because otherwise, in the first place, you lose your own creativity, trying to play over that noise, and you can't do it.
Yeah.
And you get upset, and then nothing comes out. So you might just sit back in the pan and take off.
It's funny, that's true, because actually I've done that at different places. You know, once you get annoyed or lose your cool, you're done.
You don't care anymore.
So you might as well just get into the piano and play for yourself, right?
But actually what you do, you play for someone who, you may see someone who's listening, is trying to listen, so you play to them.
Yeah.
So you ignore the other noise, you see.
Because the room you're playing now is usually very quiet. It's lovely over there.
It's been done very nicely.
What is it? The Carnegie Tavern.
Yes.
And I'm thinking of so many things I've heard you play there. Why don't you pick one of the tunes that you play? And would you like to do a Harold Arlen tune? You're the guest. The choice of tunes is up to you. Just.
Well, a little ballad. Would you like a ballad or what?
You know what I'd love? That thing you did on the record that you made when we were in Argentina together with Teddy and Earl, Blues in the Night. And the audience loved that so much. Remember this guy in the audience was hollering for that tune, and he hollers out, "My mama done told me."
That's right, you did. I'll do that.
And you did it right after mm-hmm. that.
Will do.
Okay. You know, I love that tune, and I love the way it changes key, where it goes to the bridge. That part is hard. You know, like that. Am I right so far? I do it in another key. It's
funny. No, that's the same key.
Well, of course, you're probably one of the best known accompanists before you ever started stretching out as you're doing now on your own and playing dates in clubs. You were for many years accompanist to so many singers. Sure. How did that start? How did you get into that end of things?
Well, it started, I would say, in 1940-41. I was working at a little record company. It was just, they used to make discs, you know, for demos and whatnot. And I used to rehearse singers and play for them. And then I met, actually, it goes back, it's 1941, 42. And the two Page Boys from NBC came in, and they wanted to do, put the chord structure to a certain tune called Mad About Him, Glad About Him, How Can I Be Sad About Him Blues.
Yeah.
Which is the thing that made Dinah Shore. And they said, so I wrote it out. I think they paid me about $3 for it. So they said, well, next week they came in and said, well, I'm going to take it to NBC. I want someone to hear you. So I went to NBC, and this was Billy Moore Trio, had a trio then. So I went to Studio 8H, and I played for them, so then I joined the trio.
What trio was that?
Billy Moore Trio. So then he called John Hammond, and John Hammond put me in the union. Then I went to Cleveland in 1942. But then I was always playing for singers, auditions, whatever, you know.
Well, you played for some of the greatest. Did you play for Billie Holiday?
Only once.
Where was that?
That's on a date. That's a little record date. I filled in for someone until he came in. And I split.
How was it? How did it feel?
Oh, fine.
I mean, I think you really know so much about people accompanying them. Some singers come in and they're very, at least I imagine, I've accompanied a few people too in my time, and some people know their key and they're very professional, they have the music. Others expect you to know the tune.
True.
And then they say, I do it in F, and then they start right out in B flat.
Yeah, sure. That
and you expect it to go there. That must have happened.
Of course.
Well, tell me about some of the others, the most memorable.
Well, Ella was a pleasure. Because I did two albums, no, three albums with her, actually. Uh-huh. But all we did was look at the tunes. I picked the key and just went just straight ahead. That was just like this. And then and on that album, Ella sings Gershwin.
Yeah, that's one I love.
You only hear that she had laryngitis on that thing. You wouldn't know it, except for one little thing, and I have a crush on you. There's a little peak there, but that's a little in the throat. But we did 14 tunes. Just like this.
She had laryngitis.
Mm-hmm. She sang over it.
Goodness, she must really know how to accommodate herself or sing over that, because you never would know.
No, you don't. Except if you have to listen very hard, very closely to hear that little thing in there, which is a little pop there, but that's all.
That's a beautiful album.
I thought so. I really enjoyed it.
I think I'm trying to think when I first got to know of you. Possibly it was through that album or. I know you came in and sat in at the Hickory House and we played Four Hands. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
It's a long mm-hmm. time ago. And I was so impressed because, you know, I always thought, well, I have a pretty nice touch on the piano. But when you sat down to play, I thought, boy, here comes somebody with a really soft, delicate, beautiful touch. And
tell me more.
Shall I continue? You know, I was thinking while you were talking about these Harold Arlen tunes, maybe we could do one together. And what would you think about doing Between the Devil and the Deep?
Why not?
Why not? Can't think of a reason. Well, you choose your key and...
Well, A-flat is good.
A-flat? Great. Okay.
You got it. Thank you.
yes, the way we planned it. Amazing.
Oh, of course.
I would just love to sit here and play, but there's so many things I want to ask you. See, a thing like that has to be... well, we've played together once, but on one piano. I mean, playing together on two pianos, it really takes a lot of listening and kind of instant psyching out what the other person's going to do.
You have to listen.
I wanted to ask you about a tune that's actually an album title, and I think it's something you wrote. This is an album that I believe Charlie Bourgeois had something to do with, or probably everything to do with, called Perfume and Rain. Mm-hmm. And I wish to goodness somebody would re-release that, or maybe you could put some other tunes to it and make a bigger album out of it, because it's only a 10-inch.
It wasn't, right. Mm-hmm.
But that was a fantastic album. Is that your tune?
It is.
Perfume and Rain. Mm-hmm. Could you play it or play a little of it? That's the most beautiful title. Beautiful. You like the key of D flat, don't you?
It lines well for certain things, melody line wise.
But do you play in all keys?
I do. Yes, I do.
I mean, do you play some tunes in B or F sharp because they feel good there?
I do. Well, this comes from working with singers, because you can have a thing in B flat and C, but B natural might be the key that suits the arrangement that has a melody of poise. So you play in those keys.
That's a great training, because I think everybody should play in all keys. But wasn't it hard at first?
No. Mm-mm.
Well, because
no, this is part of ear, too. And then once you know your instrument, so if you can play it in one, you can play in the other. I'm not talking about things that call for quite a bit of virtuosity, but it's a simple melody. If you can play it in F, you can play in F sharp.
Well, I think so, but it's funny. I think maybe some people shy away from those keys because somebody said it's difficult. And I don't think it's that difficult.
Well, if you think about those who started playing by ear, not knowing, they start playing on the black keys first, so they play in F sharp.
Hmm? Some people start in the black keys. Yeah, I guess they do.
Going, yeah, that's easy to do.
Or something. Right.
Well, that's where they start.
There's more to come with Marian McPartland and her guest, Ellis Larkins. This is Piano Jazz from NPR Music.
Well, you were talking, accompanying, I know has been so much a part of your career and of your life. You must have played all these great clubs like the Blue Angel. Well, I know you did, and Cafe Society.
Yes.
What came first?
Cafe Society.
And who did you play for there?
Oh, that's my first one. I think I played for, wait a minute. I have to think. It's been a few years. Oh, I did Georgia Gibbs, Mildred.
Mildred Bailey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
What a beautiful singer.
We were doing it with the Blue Angel. And the first number was a blues. So now I know it's a blues, but I can't think what it was. So she's looking, she's starting perspiring. I'm perspiring. I can't think. I played about four or five choruses of blues with that. Because we can't think. See, what's the first name? What's the first name? Word. I said, I think. I can't. I'm still playing. Then I said, Mildred, it's baby. She said, God, dog it. Then we finally did it. But at the blank, I think I must have played about six choruses of blues. So I couldn't think of baby. It was all baby, baby all the time.
But it's funny, and probably the people just thought this was the introduction, or you were just
moving along. They thought it was part of the act.
Haven't you ever done that when you're playing solo piano? You just can't think of a tune.
I have. I used to, also at the Blue Angel. I used to have with the trio. I used to do open with All of Me, and I vamped and I vamped. And I said to myself, I said, "What am I playing?" I couldn't think. What I've been playing every night, six nights a week. I couldn't think what it was. Then it finally hit me about 2 minutes later, I'm playing All of Me. Mental blank.
Well, you really had a great a career in accompanying before you had your present career,
which is true.
Solo, I guess, mostly. Or you did have a few times I've seen you with a bass. At Gregory's, you had a bass player.
Yeah, that was just for 2 years, yeah. But basically, the only reason I'm doing a solo piano now is because Gil wanted no bass, but just me alone. So I said, well, here I am. So the only thing about it makes me mad because I can't cheat because I have to use the left hand all the time.
You know, there's something about playing solo piano, though, to me that's very, very satisfying because you can do just about anything you want. You can change key in strange places and you can make strange modulations.
Change tempo, whatever.
Yeah, although, of course, if you have a very good bass player, you can practically do all those things anyway, but still there's that little extra freedom.
In fact, it's much more freedom because I don't care how great the bassist is. He cannot know your mood at a particular time. For instance, like if you sit on a stand and you watch, and you take a look at your audience, and you may feel something from them, you feel that they want to hear this instead of such and such and such. And you don't have time to take to the bass, I'm going to play such and such, because we need to, you catch that mood and you go right into it.
Do you really kind of intuitively psych out the audience and sort of think what kind of an audience it is and what they'd like to hear?
Yes, in a way of speaking, I do, because you can see, you can tell by the first thing you do sometimes. Sometimes I've done things at 8 o'clock, and I would think they would want something very quiet. They want something up, because I still bring it down, and I watch it, and I play a little something in here. Now, 9:30, 10, I know what they want, then they want to bring it down a little bit. Just want to get some, but you can see that if you're looking.
Well, you usually are. You sort of case the room in a very unobtrusive way. You know, you look around.
Well, I'm sneaky.
I know you're sneaky. I found that out when we were in South America. That was some tour, wasn't it?
It was beautiful. I enjoyed it.
And I think one of the things I enjoyed most was after I did my part of the program, standing in the wings and watching the other people. And I used to listen to you because and wonder how you could get so much intensity in your playing. Because you'd never get really loud, but the thing, what would you call that? That you build up to a crescendo, but without making it very loud. You'd change the chords, you would make the chords.
It's a color change. Like, what some people say, they use the word nuances. But it still gets to build intensity, not loudness.
Yeah, but not too many people do that. Most people figure, well, they'll get loud, or they start loud, and then they have no place to go. But I wish you'd do something for me, and that is play one of the tunes that you did there in that concert, Perfidia, because I think this demonstrates this, how you would get the tune building to a point where everybody was really hanging on the edge of their seats. But you didn't get that much louder, but the chord changes.
Yes, dear.
Lovely.
Thank you.
You know, I was still waiting for more on Perfidia. I think you cut that thing short.
Well, I thought two courses was enough.
Well, you know something? You might have a point, because today people take such indulgences when they're playing. Like, you play 10 choruses or 15 choruses of the same tune. Sometimes it's, I must have this on my mind. I seem to have mentioned this before. I'm one of the worst offenders. honest to God, I'll be enjoying myself with the bass and drums, especially with the trio, and the thing will be just going along great. And I'll think, just one more chorus. Oh, you know, it feels so good. But that's probably just the one I should have left out.
Well, I think it's because you're not thinking lyrically. Because, for instance, there are certain tunes with the lyric. Once said, that's it. There's no more to be said about it.
That's a
good example is during Gershwin's Someone to Watch Over Me. You do the verse and the chorus, that's it. What more can you add to it? Nothing.
Well, I guess I'd want to play sort of after that, I'd want to play one for myself.
But what can you play that will make it any better than it's already written? Because it's so well constructed.
It is. It's a beautiful tune.
Gershwin has done it. It's like playing 45 courses of Honeysuckle Rose. You can do three, and you've said it. That's what when the Fats did it. They just took the last chorus and they ride it out. Deep, deep, do, deep, deep, deep. You know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, what are you and I going to do? Because we're going to play something and take more than one chorus.
That's up to you.
All right. Well, how about Squeeze Me?
That's it.
Billy Strayhorn?
No, that's Duke. A Duke.
I thought so.
Yeah, that's a Duke. Yeah.
Let's do that one.
You play something for me?
You know, all right, I will, but it's funny because you really tricked me. You know, I thought you were going to do Squeeze Me. And so knowing how tricky you are, you know, I thought, well, I'll wait around before I get into the tune until I hear what he really is going to do.
I told you I was sneaky.
So if somebody thinks, well, why doesn't she, somebody listening, you know, why doesn't she play the tune? I was really listening to see, now, where is he going to go? Because he's just the type that will switch tunes on me.
Well, if I had done Squeeze, I would have brought the tempo down.
But you might not have.
Just, you never can tell.
That's what I mean. But
in the meantime, play some for me.
All right. All right.
I'll tell you what. Too All Too Soon.
All right.
I'd like to hear that. It was All Too Soon.
It's funny. It was almost all too late, because I got to the bridge and I couldn't think how the melody went. So, as you noticed, I made up my own bridge the first time around. And I thought, well, maybe I'll remember it. So
you got around to it.
It came back to me, so I thought, well, I'll improvise on the first part of the bridge, and then just to make sure everybody knows I know it.
It was just a new arrangement.
Right, right. And I was thinking while I was playing, I never asked him, because I guess I wasn't thinking too much about it in those days, but I wonder how Duke felt when people kind of changed the tune around or changed the melodies or did different things with the tunes, as jazz people do.
Well, I have one thing. We were doing a show. It was Puss Café, pardon expression, but anyhow. With... He had me doing a skinny fat swallow with this rubber band.
Oh, you mean you were at the Broadway? This was a Broadway show.
Yeah, we did open and close here in one. But anyhow, we went to Toronto and Detroit. So he told me, he says, I don't mind you playing this, but I'm the one who plays stride piano. I'm not told, but any stride piano around me, I play stride piano. I said, well, you got me. So the whole thing was about a place of ill repute and things that girl, follow up the stairs with the girls, you see. So I was playing stride piano. He said, no, only I play this. I said, well, Dick, what do you want me to do? So but actually, when it came to his changing progressions, he never bothered me at all. Because he said, listen, I like that. But see, I had to imagine myself playing with just the piano and the voice alone. Mm. So I have to use fill. I have to move. I can't stay on one chord when she's sustaining too. And I'm dying because I have to move around. And I didn't get that far away from his structure. But I had to paint a little picture around, you know. Mm.
You know what would be fun to do, Ellis? The night I came over, one of the nights I came over to the Carnegie Tavern, you surprised me, actually, by asking me to come up and play. And we played four hands. Although we've got two pianos here now, let's play four hands just for a change. Would you like to? I know your game. All right, come on. Come on over here. And, you know, when we get here, we can shuffle around and see who wants the top and who wants the bottom end. What would you like, top or bottom?
I'll take bottom.
You'll take bottom, okay? All right, Ellis, I don't know if you win that or if it's a draw or whatever, but you better go back to the other piano and we'll... You're going. You've had enough of that, huh?
Yeah,
okay. Of course, you only not only accompanied a great many singers, Ellis, you also did several albums with Ruby Braff, didn't you?
Two, yes.
But how about somebody else? Maybe I'm wrong. Joe Wilder, did you record something with him?
No, he was on the album I did with Lee Wilder. Lee Wilder.
Now, there's another singer. There's a singer that absolutely killed.
Beauty.
A real
nice
stylist.
That's true, and an easy flowing. That's,
Well, did you, when you were playing for these people, did you feel any restrictions, like in what you could play? Like, you know, some singers you feel you have to give them melody notes and things to go on, or could you feel free to stray away from the?
I was always free. All they would say, all they wanted to know is I knew what I was doing. They knew what they were doing, so they just keep going. And even with when I used to work with well, like Lee Wiley, Nadette Mildred, and some others. With emails, they had they could take a range from like a big band to a six-piece band or something like that, or to a trio. But I was still free to improvise around because it was part of the thing that's the marriage of accompanying. Because you get something from the singer, and it goes back and forth. It's a hand in hand thing. So I was always free to do as I wish. I was always ended the same place, Natalie, but beginning the same.
Did you write for them too? Can you write for?
Yeah, I did. I wrote some things. Yes.
A big band.
Oh, a couple things with Benny Goodman. And I did some things with Mildred, and I did some for.
Did you work with Benny Goodman?
No. No, what I'm doing a big band.
Well, you get. I imagine you get all kinds of spots to do. I guess you've never played with a big band.
No, I haven't.
No desire to.
No, never did.
What's your favorite thing, if you have one? I mean, is playing alone or playing with a good trio, or do you have a preference?
It's hard to say. I have a thing, and sometimes I'd like to play with a trio, and sometimes just a bass and piano. Then I prefer to play with myself. It's just a thing. In other words, I think it's a matter of my just getting bored with myself sometimes, hearing myself all the time. So, plus the fact if I have a trio, I can cheat with my left hand. I don't have too much work.
It's funny. That's pretty much my sentiments exactly. They're all good in their own way, and it's nice to be able to have that variety. I never was so thankful in my life when I finally kind of liberated myself from the bass player and drummer and could play alone, because it was a long time when
it's
I couldn't.
It's rewarding.
And, of course, I do like to play with other instrumentalists. I played with Ruby, too. I think he's a ball. Didn't you find him a ball to play
he's
with?
He's a nut.
I know he's a nut, but musically.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
Musically. And there's a guy you can really kind of noodle around and repeat the phrase he plays, and then he'll do something you did, and then
it's never an answer, but it's what we call answer, respond, let's just say.
Yeah,
yeah. The French would say réponse.
réponse. So let's see what we could whip together on the Don't Get Around Much Anymore. Now, what key do you want to do this in?
D-flop.
See, you are a real D-flat person, but why do you like D-flat for this particular tune?
Because I haven't heard the band play it. I hear the trumpets. So this is a bright key.
You're right. You've got the arrangement half done. Well, you better take the melody, and I'll take the other part.
Thank you.
Ellis, that was a ball. Thank you for coming.
Marian, it's my pleasure.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and her guest, Ellis Larkins, from her first season of Piano Jazz in 1979. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Dick Phipps, recording engineer John Gelinas, editor Tom Sheely, executive producer William D. Hay. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks, from the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR. Digital conversion was made possible by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And Post, maker of post-shredded wheat, 100% whole grain, no sugar or salt added. Recipes at postshreddedwheat.com. This is NPR.